Where you been, little bird?
The house went to Oz, and you aren't in it.
I was in the airplane. In the sky.
Oh, yeah? You fly first class? They warm your nuts?
What?
Focus, asshat. I'm asking about the temperature of your nuts.
Can I just have the drugs now?
Hey, everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And I'm Aaron.
Aaron, and this is Legion Podcast Episode 21. Welcome back, Aaron. Thank you so much for agreeing to come back and do it.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me back. I so thoroughly enjoyed Legion Season 2. I kicked myself the whole time for not being on all the casts, and I am glad to be back.
Yeah, and it's too bad it looks like Season 3 is not going to be as good, but still.
But it's the closer. The closer.
I'd say that only half in jest. I think it's great, but it does feel like, oh, we're at act three of a tragedy, so
yeah.
As good as it is, mm-hmm. It's gonna be a bit of a downer.
It's not gonna be as much fun.
Yeah. We'll see. Just give us a little bit more about what you did think of season two since you weren't on.
It was really like if you recall the early coverage we had, you know, back when we did it in season one, like I was continually worried about the way they used visual metaphor and that they would do that in ways that would like, you know, confuse or make a puzzle or mystery seem more interesting than it is. Mm-hmm. And
gimmicky a bit.
Yeah. And season two is where I kind of relaxed and like, okay. There's so many fans. Like, I was listening to your guys' podcast, and Rima's talking about how Squirrel, they hooked him, and his, like, teacup spinning like a, mm-hmm. like a Warner Brothers cartoon, and I'm like, but and it's like, so much of this show, it's like, I don't think they literally had a hook to hook him. I think it's, like, supposed to describe some kind of psychic thing that's happening, some of these, but I don't know, because they, like, I thought for sure that the Mad Tea Hatter thing this episode was happening in some kind of astral plane. And then they show up in right. minivans and stuff. So it's like the mm-hmm. way they keep blending that, I think, is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like they ever use it to screw me with me or screw with my understanding of what there's like two things happening. There's what's literally happening and then there's what's metaphorically happening. And I don't think they ever play false with the metaphor.
Right.
So season mm-hmm. two has just allowed me to relax and just enjoy. Like, it's not a it's like, how do you portray a psychic battle? You can do it as a dance-off. You can do it as this crazy 60-second cell animation of falcons turning into eagles, turning into snakes, turning into M1 Abram tanks. And, like, it's just, you can have a guy turn into a supercomputer and sell it just by having him be in an aluminum box with a fan going in the background. Like, it's great. It's great.
Yeah.
I don't know what it looks like to download someone's consciousness into an Android, but I know what it looks like on Legion.
Yep.
Yeah, you kind of just go with it. And, you know, there is that sort of line between the metaphorical representation of things that are happening in the mind and what's literal. But then I think there's this third element to Legion that's almost like, you know, kind of like watching a musical. Now, people don't break out into song ever, but when you're watching a musical, they do. And when you're watching Legion, you see hooks pulling people off the side of the screen. It's just like a whimsy that you kind of the
so
show
it's
can
a magical
get away with
realism
that.
Yeah.
And
then the fact that I was impressed with it, that they had what seemed like last year and what they're paying off this year, the gonads to like make their main protagonist into a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They feel like they're really going that, and it's in a way that he's not entirely unsympathetic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed your guys' nature of the discussion of good versus bad, and I felt like this episode with like Division 3 just straight up torturing like a mentally ill addicted person, kind of shows, and the fact that they get the Shadow King working is like there's no angels on that side, but you know,
right.
David,
because
mm-hmm. I think you're right. It's so funny because like I just listened to this podcast like an hour ago. I think Jason's right in that the Shadow King ultimately has screwed David up, but I also mm-hmm. think that like what some of the stuff that Rima said, that like Shadow King might have maneuvered him into that situation, but he did make the choice to violate her mental and physical space.
Absolutely.
And the Shadow King did not make him do that. So no. I think that's where, like, and you know, the whole, like, are people good or people bad? It's like, I don't know. I think good people can do bad things, and they can do bad things long enough to become bad people. But
here's the other thing is, and this kind of goes into my discussion about the episode a little bit, but you're bringing it up, that the Shadow King, another thing the Shadow King did was inhabit David's mind since birth and fuck with him.
Right.
And so it really fucked him up mentally. And mm-hmm. yet... you can't, I mean, that happens to people in the real world too. You have a bad childhood, your parents aren't available, and it makes you, you know, unstable or whatever it is, but you still got to take responsibility for your actions. So it just makes you sort of examine all this through that lens, except with a little mutant flair added in. And I think it's really interesting. It's actually an interesting idea for David to go back in time and make it so the Shadow King doesn't inhabit his body. It's, to me, that's sort of analogous to how in therapy you'll get a coach to close your eyes and talk to your inner child that wasn't nurtured, mm-hmm. and you try to do that nurturing retroactively, only he's actually going to get to go back in time and do it. And then we'll get to see what kind of a monster he really is without the Shadow King's influence, even, is my guess.
But right, we'll see. Which might even, mm-hmm. it might even be worse. I do think, I do think the Shadow King, like Remo was saying, like, he's just straight up, he's like old school evil. He's had 1,000 years to work on his craft and decide whether he's going to be a good person, a bad person, and he's decided. And I don't know, it's like, what do you think the odds are, before we get too deep in this, what do you think the odds are that David actually does turn it, because like, you know, it's kind of like what in Breaking Bad, like Jesse's arc, mm-hmm. when he went to the therapy and he talks about all the bad things he's done. And he'd done a lot of bad things by that point in the series. And the therapist is like, well, you got to figure out a way to forgive yourself. And I feel like you're right. The only way to recover and like continue is to like hold yourself in high regard to keep you from spiraling into these shame cycles and whatnot. But mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that Sid's going to forgive you, or the world's going to think you're a good person, or it's like, that's kind of like, there's a certain amount of crosses you're always going to have to bear because of the road you've gone down. So I don't know. It's there's a lot of interesting things that they're doing about psychology and addiction and mental illness and a lot of different things in the margins, I think is really mm-hmm. neat. And I just don't know where it's going to end up. Cause I can see a world where like David is still a hero, but he's lost everything because of his sins, which seems fair enough.
I think it's right. going to be a tragedy. It really does feel like we should have a psychologist on this podcast and offer a hotline afterwards for people.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into our, you know, our top three. But first, just in general, Rima, let's start with you. What did you think of the episode in general?
I thought it was a really great episode. I didn't think it was as straight as a narrative as the first episode was, because I thought even though it was had great visuals, it wasn't as like confusing or hard to follow. This one was kind of mixed. Aaron made a good point earlier how they're kind of crossing a little bit of like, what's, you know, are we in the astral plane? Is this really happening? Like when we have the scene, you mm-hmm. know, the Mad Hatter scene, it's kind of like, is that a real place? Is that like an astral plane kind of metaphysical kind of thing happening? Are they crossing boundaries a little bit here? So I was kind of like, where are we in this whole thing? But I thought it was really great. It was a lot of fun. And I'm glad that we had David and Sydney kind of finally kind of coming together.
Face to face, yeah.
Yeah, face to face and having, yeah, kind of face to face, you know, David's projection of himself. But, you know, at least having that conversation. So there were a lot of great things about this one. I think that it's still holding strong so far. Hmm. So.
What about you, Aaron? Just briefly, what? Yeah, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Oh, it's a great episode. I think it's a notch or two below last episode. But there's like, there's the rhythm of these seasons where you've got the big, you know, things are really executing and humming, and then once you get all that, once you have so much stuff happening, you have to take a step back, take a breather, rearrange the deck chairs, rearrange, you know, reset the pieces on the chessboard, and that takes time, and it's not always the most interesting thing. I thought also the visual storytelling was a notch below. I mean, it's hard to not be, because last episode introduced the drug-addled pig with the teats and the dancing coat racks and, like, just was so next level out there. There was some good stuff, too, but there was like, things I thought that were just a little bit not as tight. But yeah, it's still a great episode, and I imagine that it's going to serve up a setup for... Because this is a pretty short season. It's only, like, eight episodes?
It's eight.
I think it's eight, yeah.
So, like, you know, I think that the pacing's kind of nice.
Yeah, to me, it was... a bit too much like a follow-on of last week. I did enjoy it a lot, but the high highs of season two for me were the episode exploring Sid's past, where he tried to figure her out, and then the one with all the different timelines, different versions of David.
And multiverse Davids.
Man, I was just so floored by those, and this, to me, this kind of an episode doesn't really compare, and yet it's still great and better than most anything I'm watching, so... I don't know. I liked it. All right, let's get into our top three. Rima, what's your number three?
I wanted to talk a little bit about the gender theme that we seem to be getting so far in season three. We're only on the second episode, so I don't know if this will be a continuation throughout the entire season or not, but I'm seeing it just at least in the first two episodes. I'm looking or thinking of the scene when David can't go into that time hallway with Switch. And the Shadow King alluded to in the first episode on time travelers are always women. And I'm wondering if that has something to do with it, why he can't go in there. I know he's thinking, well, we'll just like boost her power, thinking that Carrie can do something to kind of boost her power and that will help get David there. But maybe does that have something to do with it?
So maybe Carrie should give David a sex change instead.
I don't know about that. I didn't go there. That's not exactly what I'm thinking.
Plan B.
But then we had also, you know, Shadow King was playing O Tannenbaum to a bunch of drag queens. And then we had Carrie and Carrie in the mirror, and they had switched, like, clothes. Female Carrie was wearing, like, the suit, and Carrie the male was wearing, like, what she would wear, like, her battle gear. so I feel like we're getting a little bit so far, like, the themes about gender and the constructs and limitations that kind of come with that. We had the scene with Sydney and David when she quotes, the men worry about women laughing at them and women worry about men killing them.
Yeah.
And then
have you ever heard, no, that's awful. And what did she say right after? We need to take you down or something like that.
Yeah. And then Holly himself has said that the season is about David's journey, is about toxic masculinity. So I feel like we're getting a lot of like gender themes. And I don't know, I just thought that was kind of interesting. It seems to just kind of keep coming up, at least in the first two episodes. So I just thought that was interesting and curious what you guys thought of that. And if I'm like way off base or if you see that too.
No, I actually didn't pick up the connection about the Shadow King saying that most time travelers are women and David's inability, despite his power level, to cross that threshold. That's a really good point. Now, you mentioned that like there's a scene of all the different drag queens. Were those all drag queens? Because I thought that as the camera pulled out, there was actually... it was almost like this is every size and shape and projection of a woman that there can be. But I don't know. I might not have caught the nuance on that.
To me, they all look like drag queens, but I might have missed something too.
There's definitely the first couple, but I think that's right on. And a lot of my favorite parts of the episode were these like dialogue set pieces, like Sid versus David, Sid versus Farouk, and that's all, you know, like that quote is actually from Margaret Atwood.
Atwood, yeah. It is.
The writer of The Handmaid's Tale. So, you know, which is a tome about female pain. And I think it's a great insight.
And it just makes me think of how there's these questions about whether David is actually a villain or misunderstood or somewhere in between. But the thing that he's doing that just seems totally wrong to me, clearly wrong, is cavalierly manipulating people's minds. And he does it with Lenny and he does it with Carrie. And that feels like it could be a comment on toxic masculinity now that you bring it up, like just kind of pushing on people and trying to force things and stuff like that.
That's good.
Since you brought it up, the whole Farouk thing, he's sitting there playing Vince Guaraldi, I think, Charlie Brown music, right? Which mm-hmm. is sort of an yeah. echo of them coming into the episode with some Charlie Brown lyrics, mm-hmm. Innocent and Yearning. He said, how does it go? At lunch, you sit alone and mope. You're a wishy-washy kind of dope. And it's like he's hoping that the girl will notice him. And it's like, no, Charlie Brown never wins. Sorry, David.
But I know.
Anyway, this whole Farouk scene is like, I felt like it was the writers, because he's in this, he's playing piano. He's in this smoky black and white stylish lounge with all these 1920s models hanging around stylish and everything. And I feel like the writers were just like, what does Farouk do during his downtime? And then they just created this whole scene around that, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. Just like a meditation of the mind or something. He was just kind of caught up in his mind.
I mean, this show is really good at when they have limitations or what could be roadblocks at making something cool out of them. Like, you know, the whole thing about this guy Squirrel, who they're trying to get information out of him, and they end up dropping him out of the plane. He's going, Mac Daddy, I'll make you jump. And then instead of showing him falling and deploying the chute, which would cost money, I don't know if this was because of the money, but maybe, instead you have this guy Clark go, oh yeah, shoot, and he like walks down the hall and parachute. It's like, oh, they didn't really prepare for this very meticulously. And then no. Carrie's like, oh yeah, and then he's like, oh, I think it was too late. No, he's fine. It just takes, instead of having to pay the money to show that, which would be kind of cool, I guess, they just make a little funny thing out of it, save a lot of money, and make it better than it would have been. So I admire the mm-hmm. show for being able to do that. Okay. Aaron, what's your number three?
Oh, man. That's just, I feel like two of my threes of bullet points have already been talked about. Because like, so like, I think the two highlights were the Sid versus David, yeah. Where mm-hmm. she like really holds him account, you know. It's not, the thing she said about him not seeing her and you never did, and that he, and she's like, especially you as a telepath. And then he tried to, telepathically project how he did see her. Mm-hmm. And she slammed the door shut on it. And I think it's because, I don't know. I'd like to see what your opinion is on this, Rima. But to me, it felt like if I were a woman and someone did that to me, and they were showing this imagery, it would almost feel more like the male gaze than like, oh, love. Does that make sense? Like, you know, like what, when he saw her, what did, you know, he still saw her as an object at that point. He didn't know her or anything about her. I thought that was mm-hmm. that was really interesting, and building on all the other stuff we said, I would love to talk about the tooth. Because she's holding the tooth.
Let's hear what Rena had to say about that first, about what you just said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I took that, at least coming from Sid's perspective, and also just because you know, it seems to be a thing, and we see it in X-Men too, because there's, you know, mutants there that can mind read, and mm-hmm. it's supposed to be like a respectful thing to like ask permission. You're not supposed mm-hmm. to just like jump into someone's mind. And to me, that's kind of what David was doing with sure. this, was he's kind of forcing that thought into her head, like, you know, let me show you mm-hmm. that I was thinking about you. And to her, that's just another invasion, that she already feels violated with what he did to her.
It's like if you're interrupting, you know, someone when they're talking like that.
this is worse. Okay. But to me, that's how I took it. And she, you know, it kind of goes into some more of my points as we go on, but I feel like Sid's motivations for her actions in this season, I think part of that plays into it as well, that she's just, I don't know, I feel like it's a little betrayal of my gender to say something, but I feel she's a little scorned, and she just doesn't want to think, she doesn't, I don't think, want to have any compassion or humanize David anymore. She's mm-hmm. kind of on this path of, we have to stop you and I will kill you. And she just wants to leave it at that. She doesn't want to, you know, have that, like, their past and projected onto her.
I mean, I do see some vulnerability left, or to me, the way she looks at him is she's sad because she knows that there was something there, but she feels like it was probably all a lie, and so, you know, she has no choice but to do what she's doing now. But there's still a recognition that that there was something.
Yeah, and that's I think that's an interesting dynamic, because I think you're seeing, like, some people think that, like, love is like a state you achieve, and then, like, you know, if someone no longer loves them, it's not because they don't love them, it's just because they've forgotten, or they don't know what it feels like anymore, mm-hmm. or I'm just not saying the right words, or just something interfering with it, rather than, like, nah, you screwed up and it made you impossible for me to love. And then the opposite, I guess, of that perspective, which is once we're in love, well, we always have to be in love and I'll always love you, is that, you know, not only are we not in love, but we never were. It was never real.
Right.
Nothing was genuine. And I think mm-hmm. you see both sides of that in Sid and David. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously David's mindsets is mindset sets worse. But and also the fact that Sid, like, I hear what you're saying about the woman scored and the vendetta thing, but if she sincerely believes that he causes the end of the world on top of that, like, it's one thing to hunt down your ex-boyfriend and kill him and splatter his guts on the wall,
mm-hmm.
but if he's actually going to bring about Armageddon, you know, mm-hmm. like, so it's like, it's there's a lot of spice to that equation.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's this movie, was it Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve? Was that...
That is a movie. That's, yeah. That's the one that takes place on that
Jane
island.
Jane Seymour?
There's,
yeah.
What I remember about it is there's this penny that shows up at one point and then gets taken into the past, and then someone finds it and puts it in their pocket, and that's how it shows up. So you don't understand where the penny originated. I'm not explaining it right because it's been so long since I've seen it, but you know how that can happen in time travel movies sometimes where... Mm-hmm. something just appears out of thin air because you found it back in time and then gave it to yourself or something like that.
Right.
And so that, I wonder if that's could be something with David ending the world. Like, somebody in the future, well, future Sid, said David ends the world. And so then in their efforts to stop him, they might create that reality, you know, make it a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he's, you know, they become the force that he needs to react against, and then for whatever reason that's the end result. I mean, who knows? That's just conjecture, but it could be. Okay, where are we? You wanted to talk about the tooth.
Oh yeah, like I didn't get all your podcasts listened to. I got like the majority, but I didn't get to. Did you guys discuss the time traveler's tooth last week?
We were just saying mm-hmm. that maybe there's a cost to her power and it takes a toll on her, and the tooth, losing a tooth represents that.
See, I was thinking if it's some kind of breadcrumb that she and if she's the season's protagonist and she's actually playing some longer con that involves, you know, because, like, again, how do you trap a person who can warn themselves? You have to somehow get the time traveler on your side. And if she's, like, dropping clues that are being used by the enemy to track, like, I don't know. I feel like there's just some kind of mind blowing reveal that she's been on Division 3 side the whole time, but she couldn't say that because that would affect the timeline. I think there's going to be something like that. That's my prediction.
If I was her, I would actually use an actual breadcrumb rather than pulling my tooth out.
I know. That's a hell of a sacrifice.
But you know, a pigeon can go and pick up a breadcrumb. I don't think any animal eats teeth.
Maybe a pearl.
Fact check me on that. Do we have any biologists?
A shoe or something. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
All right. Is it my turn? Are you finished?
Yep.
Yeah.
Aaron? Okay.
Yes.
Let's see. Well, since we already started talking about the breakup, I'll see if I have anything extra to add about that, because it's one of my points. I like how in Legion they show how having mutant powers affects everyday things, like, you know, with Carrie's eating. It's funny the first time she has to eat and all that kind of stuff. So now we have this mutant post-breakup complete with this post-breakup argument where one person's actually a psychic projection. And I mean, I think, though, a lot of it really does compare. I mean, we said that she doesn't trust him anymore because he's a mind controller. And I have the question, well, now that we've seen how cavalierly he uses that, he could have been using it even just out of unconscious habit on her through their whole relationship in seasons 1 and 2, too, you know,
yeah.
Like subtly pushing her along. But still, in real life, yeah, you kind of already said this, Aaron, but in relationships, when they end, and especially when they end badly, often you go back and go, oh, now that I know what kind of person this really is, quote unquote, with this new perspective, I was fooling myself the whole time. And you start noticing things that you never noticed before, just seeing them through a new lens. And it all seems like it's different than you thought it was during the time. So this really reflects real life in that way, this whole breakup scenario.
Yeah, and there's other thing that really stuck out was like when she said, yeah, I heard you're, you know, running a cult and taking advantage of emotionally fragile young women or something like that. Yeah. He's like, oh, jealous. And right. Like, you can see the mask slip, and then he puts it back in place. Yep. Yeah.
And when he puts it on, it wasn't all just, oh, wait, I'm not fooling you. I need to. It was for himself, too. You know what I mean? Like, no, wait, this isn't tawdry. It's, it really is out of, he's trying to convince himself as well as her, I think. But
well, we also later on or throughout this episode, we see how he's mentally abusing one of his oldest friends, Lenny.
Right.
Like, he's I get the impression that she's just completely messed up. He's almost Shadow King levels of manipulating her.
Yeah, even worse because it's not subtle at all.
No, she just doesn't get to have an opinion. You're hungry, go eat. Get out of here.
And
like, it's
to me that I've seen that in that dynamic when the because relationships to me I look at as interest level. If the interest level is about the same, that's a healthy relationship. But if one person is way more interested, then they can tip over to where the other person just treats them like shit if they're going to stay in the relationship. And they're in a relationship of sorts, and she's just totally like, I want your approval, I'll do whatever. And so that makes him feel like, all right, that means I can do anything I want with you. It's like codependent. Mm-hmm. And where a healthy person would walk away from that or try to change it.
Yeah.
What else about this? Now, there's also the idea of David wanting to believe that he's a good person and deserves love, and he doesn't. And we hear all his fucking inner voices, chastising himself. Mm-hmm. When you're down on yourself and you don't feel like you deserve love, then it is hard to really love somebody else because you're mostly trying to ease your pain or fill this void or prove something to yourself. So it becomes narcissistic. And I think, you know, it's probably not a black or white thing, but I think that's what David is. And I definitely think that's what Sid thinks David is. Like, oh no, it was never about me. It was always about you, just trying to prove that you're worthy of love. And I was an object to satisfy that. So it's sad.
Yeah. It is looking more and more like they had a very immature,
like,
especially on David's end, a very immature relationship.
Yeah. I mean, but like I said, it's not black and white. And what I really still want to believe about this show, and if this is true, what I'm about to say, I actually love it, is that these things are so ephemeral or shifting, you know, like you want to pin it down. Like, that's how mental health is. You just want to have something to grab onto and label it and make it one thing, but it can be shifty.
Right.
So anyway, Rima.
Oh, my number two. So we've talked a little bit about it already, and this episode kind of made me question Sid's motivations a little bit, and I was curious after watching the scene with David and Sydney how much of her actions are actually driven from vengeance. I know that she's saying, you end the world, and that's why she feels that she has to stop him, but she is so determined when Farouk was trying to stop her last episode, after he finds out that she has killed him twice. And, you know, the time traveler has been able to go back and correct that. And he tries to stop her. He's like, well, maybe you should just stay back from the mission, stay here. And she goes, no, it has to be me. I have to be there. So I'm curious why she is the one that keeps killing him. She's the one that keeps getting through, why she feels it has to be her. And I feel like she is a little bit focused on vengeance. I don't think it's just, well, you did me wrong, so I'm going to like do the ultimate and just kill you. I mean, that's not what we do. We might feel like we want to do that to the guys that fuck us over, but I mean, no, we don't do that. But it feels like she has more of a purpose in mind and that she is pretty pissed off about how much he wronged her. That's what she talked about mostly during their conversation, is how he wasn't able to accept responsibility for his actions and how he can't see her. She even has a tattoo that says "me first," and that keeps getting focused on a lot. So it feels like she makes it more about herself than just what David's going to do. I think that is a part of it. Yes, I think she believes that he's going to do this, but I think that also helps motivate her to go after him as well.
I read some interesting commentary about that "me first" tattoo that said, like, if you observe what arm Sid eventually loses is the one that has the "me" on
me.
It.
Yeah, with
which
their
is
face.
Kind of like a, you know, in a universe where, you know, psychics can erase memories and stuff, you wonder what kind of erasure of self would that represent, you know? I think there's going to be some really interesting things that come out of there. But I also think another explanation or something to think about is the Shadow King, and I don't know how coy he's being because he's slippery as fuck, but he says that, like, your emotional intimacy with David is the thing that is going to allow us to sneak up on him and take him aware. And I wonder if he has a literal blind spot, because in the midst of kicking so much ass last week, always in the center of the chest, a shotgun, and he never sees it coming. And I wonder if it's like something where, like, is the Shadow King somehow through the astral plane aware of all these time manipulations and can kind of sense this? Because that's where I feel like it's not necessarily she's all about killing David or has to be the one to do it, although I think that's certainly going on in her mind. It's almost like she also, because he has this blind spot towards her, she's just got this kind of a natural advantage over him.
Yeah.
It could even be the kind of a thing where if she's physically present somewhere and he has this extra sensory perception of everything around him, he might just even unconsciously ignore that because that's his love.
Yeah, right. She just can't possibly be a threat. Yeah.
Well, that's what I had those thoughts too watching last week. I'm like, it's always Sid that's able to get behind him somehow. Like, he's aware of his surroundings except for when it comes to Sid. And I think that's a really good point that you made, because, you know, he wouldn't have thought that it would be Sidney that would be the one to pull that trigger and to be the one to take him out. And he says that to her in this episode. He's like, "You," without even a word, "it was you, you know, that did it." And I think you're right. I think he's got a blind spot when, or at least he did. He may not now.
Yeah, I think true.
You know, he's definitely been alerted to that, and he's got probably his radar up on that now. But I think at the time, you're right.
That does seem to be the plan. I mean, she didn't say no to it, and then we didn't see anything else afterwards. So I assume that's going to be their plan. But I do have the, because last week, you and I kind of disagreed about whether Farouk wanted Sid to kill David. And then I totally didn't hear you until I was editing, where you said that he already knew that Sid did, because of his conversation in the astral plane with Switch. He knew that Sid killed David once, and that's after that we saw him try to talk her out of going.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, well, what is he doing? Like, he doesn't even want David dead or not, because in this episode he seems like he's actually trying to help Sid figure out how to get in there. So it's interesting.
Well, because I think the Shadow King, if anything, he just wants to be the one that ends the world, right? So, like, that's why it's like I thought that something that maybe is something I heard on your guys' podcast, but like the idea that the Shadow King would, the idea that, like, the Division 3 is just, he doesn't have his crown of thorns on anymore, he doesn't seem to be on any restrictions, everyone implicitly trusts him like an ally, like, at no point in his dialogue with Sid does she just be like, "You know what, you're the fucking Shadow King, get out of my face."
No,
like,
right. I'll be so disappointed if he doesn't turn on them, I think, or something.
Yeah, I think there's something to I don't know, there's
it's just
he's
weird
he's running
that
some kind of
him.
Game. Yeah, and I don't think this makes I don't think this makes David a good guy because he's going to be in opposition of the Shadow King. But I do think you got, like, you know, the Shadow King is almost an elemental force of evil. Like, he's evil for the sake of evil. And David, you know, was, you know, I think everyone deserves love, but he has made a lot of terrible mistakes, especially against a Cid. Mm-hmm. And, the, you know, like Rima, you were just saying, it's not just that. It's just that he refuses to even acknowledge the error of his way. Like, the error is that Cid found out about it, not that he did it or that was the impulse.
Yeah,
he
and
had.
He's like, I'll go back time and erase it. But she's like, no, that's who you are.
And then, like, you know, he's jumping in like, oh, you guys are trying to kill me. He's like, well, no, actually, asshole, we tried to help contain and treat you in the intervention we staged last year, but you beasted out of it and said, forget this. So, like,
yeah.
It's like, it's sometimes, like, I think that there's a little bit of this, you know, woe is me thing with David, where he's like jumping, like, how could you kill me? It's like, well, that's not what she wanted to happen, but I don't know. She also just wanted some time to, like, think about things, and he raped her. So, is that David?
sorry to laugh at that, but yeah, I mean, speaking of that, I mean, I see, in the moment, he knew that the Shadow King got his claws into everybody, and at least from his perspective, their minds were now infected. So I can't say I 100% blame him for trying to take that out, like, to change her mind.
Yeah, you're trying to, but yeah,
then he should have told her afterwards. Yes. Look, this is what happened. You were against me, and I think it was because of the Shadow King's manipulation. So I took that out of your mind.
Yeah.
And now I'll give you time to deal with that and figure out what we're going to do next. Not let's sleep together.
Yeah. Well, but that's the whole. I mean, that's the kind of problem in a nutshell. Because, like, he's addicted to love. Like, that's one of the things that they're making a point in this episode, and he's like a junkie. Wanting to get, you know, his fix, and she wasn't giving it to him. The most, like, he could give her time, like, hey, you know, like, the Shadow King messed with your head, and there could be a lot of dialogue. Maybe they could get Ptolemy out of the computer to help. Like, I mean, there's a lot of things that could have taken a lot slower, and she could have, like, you know, built on the trust and relationship. But he wanted to take the easy, easy way. And it's like, you know, those experiments with the, like, addiction where they get like a monkey addicted to cocaine, and it's a jaminous lever to get the cocaine, and just hammer and hammer and hammer. Like, if that's what he's like with love,
yeah,
he's got no, there's no way for him to take a step back and think again. Like, you know, like, Cid is not a person; she's a lever that he slaps to get love.
Yeah.
And that's the core problem. The thing that he can't, and that's why he's so fucked, is he can't even understand what the problem is.
Right. And that's why loving yourself is an antidote to all that, because then you don't have this pain. It's a pain when you don't love yourself that you're trying to ease by getting it from somebody else.
And it's so funny because the things that Cid says to him in their conversations are the inner monologue of anyone that's ever trying to recover from depression or drug addiction or anything. That, like, you deserve this, and you're a terrible person, and everyone hates you, and you can never undo the things. Like, that's the inner monologue that keeps you. But it's a perfectly valid thing for Cid to be saying to him. It's cool, weird, because I'd hate for someone to listen to Cid and think, like, oh, well, yeah, that's it. Like, once I've done something bad, regardless of what that bad thing is, it's all over, because that's not true. But, you know, it's true from Cid's perspective.
Yeah, like, it's valid for her to be like, I'm done with you. But then, the part about, well, now I'm going to kill you, not so sure about that. I mean, it's
like, you know, like
the,
like,
mutant thing, like, makes it a lot more complicated.
Yeah, it does. But it's also, it gives you this little distance to kind of, like, it gives enough otherworldly distance to kind of, like, how do we really feel about these things, you know? Right. Which I think is an interesting framework the show successfully uses.
It is. Like, the show, I'm like, I'm going to do a podcast about this mutant show, and then it tricked me into, like, examining my own life in some ways. All right.
Damn show tricked me into therapy.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know, Mickey, where we are, Rima? I'm lost.
That was my number two.
So that means it's your turn. Do you have any more, Aaron?
Yeah, my number two is the Cid versus Farouk confrontation. And I don't think there's anything we kind of missed, but just the fact that, you know, Sid's like, well, maybe we can get ahead of him. And he's kind of coy about it. And he actually says something like, well, that's not any fun. I think in a world where Sid is not under some kind of influence, she says, what the hell do you mean by that? Like, what, you know, we're trying to stop Armageddon here. The only reason you're free and not in a cell is because you're helping us defeat the bigger monster.
Right.
But yeah, just there's a couple things that tells. Plus, this guy that plays Farouk is just so good.
Isn't he?
What he can do with the curl of one side of his lips and do that cruel little half smile is amazing. Amazing.
I mean, I think it's a little bit like the Howard Stern or Trump effect, where the person says things that are out of bounds so much that you kind of get numb to it and just, oh yeah, that's the Shadow King.
Yeah, just, yeah.
It's like that. Okay, well, my number two.
Oh, I would, because I had a couple extras, yeah, no, I also want to say how much I loved, this isn't even part of the episode, but the pre-episode where they're going the previously on, most shows say previously on Legion, this was as ostensibly on Legion.
Yep.
They do that last season too, but there's always this kind of like extra level of like, well, this is what it appears to be anyway. This is what apparently
as
happened
far
last
as we
episode.
Know.
Allegedly on Legion.
I love it.
They did that last
it.
Season. This show always has to be just a little bit extra, and right. I'm all in, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's like I was talking to Jim last week about like last week when, you know, they had that mind-blowing, like David transported the whole cult headquarters somewhere and then these robots are marching across the screen spelling Legion. I'm like, that's just Noah Hawley skeeting on the track, you know?
Yep.
Like, what he's like, yeah, like, yeah, you're gonna watch these metal robots spell Legion, you're gonna watch this fucking Wes Anderson airplane tugging a Legion thing behind it. It's like it's I don't know how they get. The show is really good. That's how they get away with it. It all makes sense in context. But like, damn, he's constantly challenging you to like, when are you going to tap out? When are you going to tap out? Is this crazy enough? And yeah,
right. And it's good that it's this is the final season because it's at its full confidence with that kind of stuff. And I would hate to see it start to feel.
Yeah, because who gives, like, this is the last season of people like are on, like, who cares? If they're on the fence, get them off.
right. Push it.
Yeah, there's no season 4, baby. Full throttle.
That's right. Turn it up to 11.
I don't know why I thought of this, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I want to ask you, Aaron, did you watch Walking Dead season 9, and what'd you think?
I watched as much season 9 to fulfill my obligation to you.
That's it,
you know, yeah, no, I wanted to, but like, I'm just so damn busy.
Okay.
And just to
curious.
Go like the recreationally, just out of curiosity, see what they did with Rick or whatever. No, I thought I might be able to talk Jim into getting back in. And then,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, because he was pretty intrigued by the way I was talking about the first four episodes I saw of season 9.
Okay,
are you still in, Jason? Are you rolling through?
Season 9
was good.
Season
10?
Yeah, you know, Rotten Tomatoes has it rated as the highest of any of the seasons. Now I don't know if I buy that, but that's
better than one.
That's what it's rated.
Yeah, it is.
Because one had like a one really kind of bad episode.
Vatos.
Like a mediocre episode. Yes, exactly. A mediocre episode, and then like pretty solidly amazing. Like,
yeah.
The pilot still one of the best pilots I've ever seen.
There wasn't a bad episode in season 9. I mean, some people thought the final one was because it was more like an epilogue, but there wasn't. All right. I didn't want to take too much time on that. And I also don't want to take too much time on my number or whatever because it was about whether David's a villain, and I feel like we've talked that out. So, Rima.
So, my number one. The last line that we had was save the world, and
I didn't get that. That's the part confused me the most.
Was it? Okay.
Because
well,
it was David's voice coming out of Carrie.
Really? I didn't get that.
I didn't get that either.
Oh.
Interesting.
Okay, I'm editing this out.
Huh.
No, that's what I heard. That's
yeah, I don't want to, got it that he slapped a pair of like old timey wireless headphones, which is seems like a slight upgrade to the time traveler's headphones already. And
funky
he's just like, it's like he's drank the Kool-Aid.
Literally.
He's like, I'm here to save the world. He no longer has a mind of his own. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, it's what though, Jason, I would totally buy if they put David Heller's voice in there because that'd make perfect sense. Right?
I guess.
Well, It would, yeah, because yeah, he's essentially controlling him. So.
Okay,
yeah,
all right. I think they did then, yeah, now that you put it that way. I really do. I'm going to have to go back and watch, but yeah.
All right, I
yeah,
am too.
Well, I am too.
I can watch this episode three more times, sure.
I was going to say, I can watch it again. I saw it three times. I can go for a fourth. Mm-hmm. It's that good. But I mean, that's what David says that he's going to do. He tells he says, go back, keep the house from being haunted. It's so important. Do you understand? It's not about a girl. It's about saving lives, starting with mine. So he thinks he's going to save the world and save lives. And then Division 3, of course, in Sydney, and everyone is telling him that he's going to be ending the world. But he thinks he's going to be doing the opposite. And, you know, I don't know that I totally believe David will or does end the world. I know that he's like the most powerful mutant. I certainly think he's capable of that. But I think you made a really good point, Aaron, and I think Jason, you and I talked about it a little bit last season, about it being like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Maybe him being told this it could make it true. It might still happen, but I don't know if I fully believe it. I mean, he's completely emotionally stunted. He thinks he's a good person. He doesn't think he can be wrong, or and he doesn't think that he deserves love regardless of what he does. And I don't really think of him as a bad guy. He's done bad things, but he really needs to be able to take responsibility for his actions, which he seems really unable to do. And I think as long as he can't, he'll be stuck. And that's what Farouk says as well. Farouk says that he's stuck because he sees himself as the victim. Mm-hmm. And it feels like what Holly's trying to kind of show us is what we see with, like, in Jason, you mentioned earlier, narcissism. You know, we get this perpetuation of abuse by victims of abuse, and their thought processes of, you know, these abusers and former victims are like, you know, I might be bad, but well, I was abused, so what do you expect? But it's like people, they're still people, so they crave love, they crave acceptance. And when
they repeat what they know too. Yeah,
exactly. And when those misdeeds are pointed out as being bad, you know, they feel rejected. And that's, I think, where David's at right now. And instead of trying to look at that, they deflect it when he keeps telling himself, I'm a good person, I deserve to be loved. And it just shows, you know, how hard it can be to kind of break through that. So, but I don't know. I feel like, you know, the sources that we're getting, you know, telling or, you know, saying that David's going to end the world, it's this future Sid, which I don't even know that we can trust her. And where is that coming from? And is that trustworthy? It's just, I don't know. I just don't know if I can fully believe that. But they believe it, so that's why they're after David. And maybe they believe it, and they're coming after him, and that then could then result in him really destroying the world. I don't know. But it's, I don't know. I'm interested to see what you guys think.
They're a violent organization, for one thing. That's like their either first
they always
or
have been.
Second answer to any problem. Yeah.
I feel like Division 3 is a little kinder, gentler last season, but that is that is out the door now.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't even care that much about Squirrel when they release him from this plane. And they're like, hey, parachute.
No, that's
parachute.
That is classified by the United Nations as torture. To simulate an execution like that is straight up torture. They're torturing a mentally ill drug addict.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Fun to watch, though.
Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of times, like, you know, fucking Tony Soprano and Don Draper and Prince Joffrey are all fun to watch.
Yeah.
They're real shit. So.
Yes. Yeah, I like how you equate Don Draper with Joffrey. That's a new one, but I like it.
Now I really need to go watch Mad Men.
Brothers from Another Mother. So
you do need to go watch Mad Men. You love it.
One of my favorite shows ever. There's some good podcasts out there for that, too.
I heard.
So just one thing you made me think of is, you know, David, like, he's coming off so skittish and he's supposed to be this cult leader, but one kind of flaw I feel like is, I think cult leaders actually, especially when they're first getting started, they really do have strong beliefs, and David is very shaky. Like, he has a very thin veneer there that breaks pretty easily. But anyway, he's so skittish and he has these critical inner voices, and so anything he's doing I'm sort of questioning. But when I really thought about it, I thought, if you actually had the ability to go back and try to prevent the Shadow King from infecting yourself when you were born, hell yeah, do that. I think it would be worthwhile to see what would happen. But then his next thing is, yeah, you know, then I'm just going to fix everything. And that really seems like a recipe for tragedy, or, you know, it doesn't seem like that's any way that's going to go well. What is he going to do? Just like try to make the whole world feel better about themselves? I don't know. Maybe that'll be the end of the series. Like, everyone on the planet Earth becomes self-actualized.
Or maybe it's going to be like the, what is that? The Heinlein, is it Heinlein about the, it's the, not the moon is a harsh mistress. It's the one where everyone's on drugs. Damn it. For screw it. I forgot what it is.
Sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
It's like everyone's, it's the opposite of 1984. Everyone's on happy, everyone's on happy drugs. And that's like,
no.
It's something. Mm-hmm. There's like a thousand people shouting in their cars, you know, the name of this work.
Is it Aldous Huxley?
Yes, I think.
Door?
No. A Brave New World. Brave New World.
That's
Brave
it.
New World.
It was Aldous Huxley. Yeah. It was Brave New World. That's what I'm talking about. Everyone can stop screaming. I hear you. I hear you. I'm all over the world. The psychic strain.
Yeah, it was that future psychic screaming that just brought it into my mind. Thank you guys for going down that time hallway.
There you go.
Okay, what's next? I'm lost once
that
again.
That was my number one.
Okay.
So I've got a lot of batting cleanup here because my number one is the kidnapping of Carrie Loudermilk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I loved Lenny, the Breakfast Queen's Cheshire Catmobile. I love the Tom Petty Don't Come Around Here No More Tea Party. I love how Carrie Loudermilk describes them as they're doing the drugs.
The drugs.
Like they're taking the pot. They're doing the drugs. I love, you know, Carrie sneaking out by hiding behind his. It's ludicrous, and it's one of those things that like works kind of on an astral plane level, but it's so fun to watch him do this. And like every season, they give him something physical to do because he's such a you know, talented physical comedian. And I loved Carrie and Carrie's dance,
mm-hmm.
and they're brushing their hair in a mirror and the struggle to lead. And I felt like that was such kind of like a beautiful little mini movie, that could be applicable to like internal doubts. I think there was a lot of like commentary and like what it's like to be a trans person. Because Carrie is literally has a woman trapped inside his man's body, and how that feels to like, you know, like there's two spirits inside you, and your mom's telling you one thing, and that's and your dad's telling you. I just thought that stuff was really great, and I loved it all. One thing I have to ask you guys is there's been a slight tweak to the Vermilion look. Where like last year it was like these kind of waify androgynous women with the bowl haircuts and the mustache. They've gotten these full facial appliances that make them all look like Mike Ditka. And I don't have you noticed like they've added these appliances that give them big brows and the same big kind of nose, and I find it distracting. Whereas I really like the aesthetic of them last year. I don't like the new Vermilion. Hmm. I don't like the new Vermilions.
I didn't know. What I notice is there's no Fukuyama, and they always seem to surround him. And I guess the show thought he was superfluous, but they kept the Vermilion. So that's interesting. But no, I didn't notice the look. I did feel something was different, but I didn't observe it exactly what it was. So
yeah. I just bought them last year. They got a slightly upgraded costume, and then all the facial nose and brow and like chin appliances I thought were a little distracting.
I don't know that I noticed their facial features as much. I noticed their slight wardrobe upgrade, and I don't know if it's just because we don't have as many. We seem to have a lot of Vermilion in last season. There were multiple that you could often look at and kind of see. You know, they did, even though they all looked the same, they still kind of had their own uniquely defined like cheekbones and you know, things like that. So maybe I need to go back and look at that. I find that interesting.
Okay.
Anything else?
That's all of kidnapping Carrie.
Yeah. Mine was good. About capturing Carrie too, and we already talked a lot about it. But one thing we didn't mention is when David gets mad that Sid rejects him and the blue bliss ooze turns
red.
And now it makes you
angry.
And
the effects are,
it was
effects
like,
are different.
It was MDMA, but now it's more like meth. It's red meth.
He's treading out those grapes of wrath now.
Yeah.
And then they gave it to Squirrel so he could be a distraction while they kidnapped Carrie, right? I think that's what their whole plan was. They were luring Division Three.
Oh yeah, there. No, that was great. That was they probably used that for the time. Like I imagine that the time traveler helped them with that. That they saw it coming and they did, or this maybe they arranged it. Mm-hmm. And they did seem like they sacrificed a lot of the cult members to do that, which is kind of cold on David's part.
Oh yeah, wow. He doesn't give a shit.
Well, that's true.
Nah,
there's always more to come.
Yeah, I wonder, because like the other thing is like I thought there was going to be an extreme change in behavior when the fluid went from blue to red, and it's like excruciatingly long scene where the red would almost get to the people and it cut to the next sequence and then you'd see him like start to inhale them and it cut, and then they finally got to where like there's a dance party, it just got faster and more intense. I was expecting some
fun.
Like no, I was expecting some like Eli Roth shit to break out, but maybe there'll be maybe room for that in future episodes.
Okay, I think we're done with our top three. We usually like have a notes segment for any other random things that we didn't mention that didn't warrant a whole point. Do you have any of that, Rima?
The only other note that I want to talk about whenever you guys were talking about the kidnapping of Carrie and his dance scenes and such, I found it really interesting. I didn't realize, I've enjoyed Bill Irwin since day one in this series, but I didn't realize that he was a professionally trained clown, and he was trained in the vaudevillian style of acting, and that's really comes into play, especially here. I mean, he's had some really great, like say he's great with physical comedy. He's had some great dance sequences in season two when he has a whole dance sequence with the broom in his lab or something. And then like the fighting when Carrie was getting attacked. Maybe that was season one. I watched season one and season two back to back just before this season, so some of these might be getting blurred. When Carrie was fighting in the woods and she was being attacked and taken down by the Division Three soldiers, and he was kind of feeling the physical part of that as she would get kicked and he would fall back in the lab, things like that. He's got great physical abilities, and I love that.
I saw him in Popeye, which is, I really like Popeye. It's,
yes.
What's his
love
name?
That.
Who's the director?
Robin Williams. He did
The Player and MASH, Robert Altman. And
yes.
And he played, what's his name? Bill Irwin. He played Ham Gravy, and he was like, I think he was like the town drunk, and he would be walking along and then just kind of go into a roll and then pop back up. And then he was also Mr. Noodle
that.
In. Sesame Street.
Yes. I thought it was interesting. We talked a little bit about how Farouk was telling Sydney, like, you know, we can kind of trap David and he wouldn't be expecting it, you know, if it was a lover. And I just thought that was interesting because then in season two, Clark was telling Sydney that, you know, when she was expressing her fears about David and how he could maybe turn. And he was like, well, it could also, he was kind of putting a lot on her because he's like, if you break his heart, that might make him turn. That could make him be vengeful and make him destroy the world. Whereas if you stayed with him or placate to him, that could keep him like calm and at a manageable, manipulative level. So I just think it was interesting how they're kind of playing both sides of that and using Sid to kind of, you know, keep David like under control or try to manipulate him. Last note that I had, just Aubrey Plaza, I mean, she's fantastic, but I'm curious, Aaron, you mentioned the look of the Vermilion looking a little bit different this season.
I think I know exactly what you're going to say.
Aubrey Plaza to me looks a little bit different this season. Her looks are leaning, in my opinion, more towards David's sister Amy. I mean, we know that she's inhabiting her body, but is it just me, or I mean, I know that we saw the blue eyes, but the
I was gonna
hair...
say they changed. I think they're also messing with the contacts to make her pupils very small and fixed in one scene and very huge in the other to give her that slightly even more unhinged. But I never thought about that. Like maybe David's sister's genetic code is reasserting itself or something. That's interesting. That'll be interesting to keep an eye on going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I don't know. It just feels like, because remember last season, they seemed to make a big thing about Amy's consciousness still kind of being present in that body. Mm-hmm. Remember how she kind of confronted her whenever...
David said that his sister used to move a certain way or something. So she was copying some of her mannerisms or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he said, oh, my sister used to do that. Or she was like had her hair in her mouth or something, playing with her hair, doing something there. And he goes, my sister used to do that. And there was that big scene there whenever she finally got out and she was, you know, doing the drugs and she had, you know, her whole drug infested party and such. And then her Amy's consciousness kind of confronts her. And I feel like that was kind of a big moment in that episode and in the series. I hope that they don't just move away from that. So I feel like, I don't know, a little bit that's kind of coming out just a little bit, because we know that she is in her body. And I just wonder if that will kind of come into play again, if Amy's consciousness is still kind of there. Or, you know, I don't want that to kind of be for nothing.
I mean, in my opinion, it would be cool and fine if it does become a plot point. But if it doesn't and we just see her do and it look more like Amy and they never touch on it, that would be totally Legion too.
Totally, yeah. And I would be okay with that. I would be okay with that. But that's all the notes that I had.
Okay, let's see. Mine, I just wanted to read the lessons in time travel that we got this time. It's about consequences when considering a trip backwards in time. Deliberate on your plan carefully. What do you hope to accomplish in the past? What lives will you interact with, either casually or deliberately? Consider the consequences of your actions. Not all temporal interactions go as planned. I mean, we didn't see any time travel in this episode, so I feel like that might have some future implications, or it's just sort of a warning that, hey, these things don't always go well.
Plus, it's a contrast to like David's demeanor. He does not seem like he's calmly or carefully planning anything. He's just blunder. So, like, here,
And I was just remembering how in season one, D3's had David and they were interviewing him. And I think, I don't know, remember if it was Clark or somebody suggested that they eliminate him now before he realizes what he is. I bet they're wishing they would have done that. Some of them.
Probably.
A couple more. I like, this is a small one, but when Switch outlines her door, I like how she kind of flicks down on one side and it just goes straight down, and then she traces the top, and then she kind of does a little curve on the other side, and they always have that side be curved. It's just a nice little flourish, a nice little touch. Mm-hmm. The manifestation of her power is really cool. I also liked how when she showed it to him and he was gazing through and he just had this look on his face that reminded me of the old David, like, oh, wow, that's so cool. And then he couldn't get through and it was just a nice visual thing. And then, no, I guess that's it. That's all the notes I have. Is there anything else you wanted to mention, Aaron?
No, now I know you got the wrap-up section. I wouldn't have forced the, what was the thing that I probably would have saved one of the mini kidnapping Carrie Laudermick points for this.
Yeah.
But yeah,
next time, yeah, just whatever random stuff can go in here.
I did not know that the symbol for tungsten was W because another name for it is Wolfram.
Learn something new.
There you go. Science.
Periodic table. Science, bitches.
All right, we're going to take a little break. There is more to come, so stay with us.
Oh, you've lost 900 baseball games, and we kids all love to call you names, and you never learned to fly a kite, and your pen licks so you cannot write, and at lunch you sit alone and mope, you're a wishy-washy kind of dope. Charlie Brown, Charlie Brown, you don't have one hope.
Okay, so we have one item for the news this week. This comes from Marvel.com. It was an interview with Aubrey Plaza, who, of course, we know as Lenny in the show. Lenny is at the top of the world, revealed Plaza. She's living her best life. She's got a second chance at living a real human life. She's no longer being tortured by the Shadow King, and she's running this cult with David Haller, this psychedelic kind of Manson cult. So she's happy. Speaking on the energy of the cult, Plaza shared, Lenny loves it. She's surrounded by badass women. It was cool to bring that feminine energy to the set, and we're all kicking ass at the same time. And of course, as we saw in the season premiere episode following the events of season two, Lainey's found love in her life with Salmon, and they're expecting a child soon. Lainey's found the love of her life, says Plaza. She's almost ready to settle down in a weird way. However, her perfect life is threatened with the arrival of Switch and David's sudden reliance on the new figure. She says there's a power struggle when Switch comes on board. Switch has skills that David really needs. Her entire life, he kind of saved her in a way, so it's hard for her to deal with Switch at first. She wants to establish her power over Switch as much as she can, but you'll see that doesn't really stick so much. So yeah, that was something we didn't really talk about, was, mm-hmm. you know, how Lainey was kind of dealing with Switch, kind of making it known, you know, her role.
That's typical cult things, is the leader has his favorites and there's a pecking order and some new girl comes in and all the other people are jealous, but he's mm-hmm. she's the new favorite, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, you see in corporate America too,
right?
Like it's like Michael Scott's assistant, god damn it, what was his name, Dwight
yep,
Schrute,
Dwight.
You know, wants to make sure everybody knows his place in the pecking order. But it's a sign of massive insecurity, but I feel like it's warranted because she's being mentally manipulated every step. Like, you know, she's got insecurity about her relationship with David and all that, but she's got good reason to be. So,
mm-hmm.
What was he? He would say assistant manager, and he would say no.
Yeah, assistant to the
assistant
the regional
to
manager,
the yeah. To the regional manager. Uh-huh. It was interesting what she says in that article as well. Did you know that the girls that were in the van when they pick up Squirrel? When he's released from Division 3, or however you want to say he was released from Division 3, those girls are credited as Manson girls.
Oh, that's how
that's actually how they're credited in this show. They look like kind of like Manson cult going.
Yeah, and they definitely have this 60s vibe. And
yeah,
that's another thing I didn't talk about. But I've definitely flirted with the whole alternative thing and the raves. And, you know, I'm in San Francisco and there's this chasing of bliss, but also love. And, you know, there's definitely some good to be had there, but there's also some danger. And I feel like this show mostly presents the bad stuff. You know, it's really focused
the
on
the dark side of it.
Yeah, the dark side. But it's fine. Okay, let's get into some mental notes. This is our listener responses segment.
So first one we have is from Elliot Nelson. Great episode for season 3, episode 1, as always. But that Dan Stevens interview has me thinking. Did he actually just forget there are 27 chapters, not 26? Or was he giving us a subtle hint that he dies in chapter 26, hence being able to explore the character for only 26 chapters?
Nope. I think he was not in an episode last season, and that's why. He said that.
I almost said this, like, when we were talking about Aubrey Plaza's insights on Lainey, is that, like, this March 2020 I'll be doing Bald Move for 10 years, and I've been doing television
nice.
Coverage for like
Woo.
Eight of that.
Congrats.
And well, thank you. That's not what I was listening, but I appreciate it. I one thing I've learned is, like, actor interviews are often as confounding as they are illuminating for several different reasons. One, I don't know that every actor has a great solid grasp on their character. Like, the main cast usually do. Uh-huh. Because, like, a lot of these people, like, they literally just get the script, the pages that they're in, they shoot those things, and they watch it, they watch the whole thing like we do. Mm-hmm. So they tend to, like, you know, inflate their own importance or get, like, character beats wrong because it's what felt right when they were filming doesn't feel like it feels like it's put in the whole thing. So, like, a lot of this stuff, like, number one, he just probably got confused. Number two, maybe he is lying and Noah Hawley told him to lie, or maybe they're fine. It's like, there's just, like, it's just another level of the
you
game,
never know.
Man.
He might have just said the wrong thing. I do that
Absolutely.
All the time.
Oh, yeah,
Kit Harington swore through a 9-inch plank that Jon Snow is really dead, too.
I commend him for that. Mm-hmm. I think Steven Yeun should have done the same thing.
Mm.
Okay, wait, where are we? Oh, it's your turn, Aaron.
Oh, Casey Mayer, can you guys dig into a little bit on Amy Holler and Lainey? I can't seem to wrap my head around how Lenny resides in Amy's body. Did Lenny really exist in the asylum, or was she always part of David? Did she exist when she was trying to sell the stove? I don't understand when she was real and when she was in Farouk and then used Amy's body. Does Farouk still control her in any way?
So Lenny met David in Clockworks and they became friends. And then for some reason, the Shadow King made David remember his old druggy friend Benny as Lenny. But Benny was actually this like older guy. Mm-hmm. And so the stove thing was with Benny. And when they said, it's always blue, and they were just doing drugs and like trashing his therapist's place, all this stuff that happened before Clockworks, before he actually met Lenny, was Benny. But Shadow King fucked with his memories and made him remember that as Lenny. And maybe because, well, then once Lenny was killed, so what happened is when Sid and David first touched and switched bodies, and Sid inside David's body freaked out and accidentally killed Lenny, stuck her inside the wall. Then the Shadow King got Lenny's consciousness or whatever and took with him inside David, I think, or maybe in the astral plane, whatever. And then the Shadow King from then on took on the form of Lenny. And so when you saw Lenny after that being really sassy towards David and fucking with him, and even in...
always the Shadow King.
He was the Shadow King. And maybe so one theory of why he made David remember Benny as Lenny was just to sort of strengthen the connection to that visual image or something, so he would trust her more or something. I don't know. It never really totally made sense to me. But anyways, then in season two, we saw that then you started to see Lenny's like astral form. And so that was, and trying to get out. And then they took Lenny and put her inside Amy's body. So now we're seeing Lenny again, the person that David met in Clockworks. That's my take on it. Who knows with this show, but it's the best I can do.
I agree with that. It's my understanding.
Okay. John Hoskins says season 3, episode 2 was a bit of a letdown after the premiere. Felt like one of those episodes that's setting up the next big thing. Still great visuals and performances and things happen, but not like the first episode. I would kind of agree with that. I mean, I wouldn't call it a letdown, but like Aaron, you said it too. It wasn't quite as good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Still got the big fat pig though.
Yeah. And again, like very few television shows can maintain like the pacing of episode 1 throughout a whole season.
Right. Yeah. I just want to see some sharp left turns that this show's known for, you know?
Yeah, you got to construct a plot so its machinations work out. Mm-hmm. And every, like, I remember when we were covering Breaking Bad, like, every 3 or 4 episodes, they'd have one of these, like, you know, kind of, and people would freak out about, oh my God, it'll, first of all, Legion has got 6 more episodes and it will be over, but I expect there'll be plenty of crazy fireworks to come.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Can't wait. Casey Robertson says, great episode. The visuals were awesome. Loved the entire Alice in Wonderland motifs, the Cheshire cat on the van, the Mad Hatter. I really enjoyed the interaction between Carrie and Carrie. Very trippy. I'm also glad they had the scene with David and Sid. With the long break between seasons, it was a nice refresher to remind us that even though David believes he's innocent, Sid hasn't forgiven him, and even if he were to go back in time, he's still the same David. I really think the only way he could fix this is if he were able to travel all the way back and prevent Farouk from ever invading him. Can't wait till the podcast and next week's episode.
I'm sure that's going to fix everything. Yeah, it's going to be fine.
No unforeseen consequences.
Nope, not at all. Everything will be great.
Matthew J. Morrison, so good. Love the Alice in Wonderland bits. I noticed the way the van is painted right away and assumed it was just one of those random things. Yeah, I wish I had a minivan just so I could paint like that.
Covered in carpet on the inside. And
Put
some of Manson's girls in there.
I was going to say loaded with crazy psychic girls with kitchen knives. Yeah.
Do it.
Some blue drugs.
Rory Tom says, I have some thoughts. Future Sid was missing her left arm, the arm that now has a tattoo of a simple face and the word me. Will it be David or Farouk who removed it to blur her sense of self? David, I would say. Bill Irwin is a genius. The timing of his sequence in the clock room is impeccable. Farouk is the gaslighting king. He's playing this whole thing and all the players are at his disposal. Or maybe it's just Holly who's gaslighting all of us. Farouk has experience with time travelers and has been alive for 2,000 years. But were they linear years? Maybe not. Farouk is enjoying all this way too much. What would be the fun in that? I'm all Farouk. As usual, my brain hurts, but damn, this show is awesome.
Hurts in a good way. Like that. Next one's from Jamie Henry. Random thought about chapter 20, last week's episode. The entire episode was essentially a 45-minute long pre-title sequence. Freaking amazing. About chapter 21, Bill Irwin as Carrie has such a physical presence. The scene when he's following the cult member around in order to sneak out of the door, not forgetting his jacket, of course, was wonderful. I could watch him move silently around a room forever. Shortly after that, he saw Carrie in the mirror. Then their clothing switched and they started dancing, all the while arguing about whose dance number it was and who should lead. The two of them together always make me happy. Of course, Carrie in that scene was actually David, but still. Carrie wearing Carrie's jumpsuit was perfection. Two, when David was talking to Sid and then switch, it seems to me like he wants to time travel back to his beginning and change everything. Perhaps he thinks he can fix all his problems if he's never infected by the Shadow King. I have a feeling that won't be so easy and most likely won't work out the way he thinks it will. Thank you guys for doing the podcast. This is such a beautiful, confusing, fascinating piece of television that nobody else I know watches. Listening to you guys helps me make sense of it and enjoy it even more. Peace and love.
Aw.
Oh, that's nice.
That's nice to hear. Yeah.
But I want some of the red juice.
Are you in a rage?
Yeah, just to switch it up.
Let's get some red juice feedback going next week.
Oh, gosh.
That's a call to you guys.
Oh, no. I'm scared.
All right, that's our show, episode 21. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Rima and Aaron. That was really fun.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron.
Thanks to you guys.
If you want to get in touch, send us some red juice. You can email that or send a voice message to us at legion@podcastica.com.
You can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And be sure to check out Jim and I's other shows at baldmove.com and Jason and Rima's at podcastica.com.
Yeah, we got Stranger Things starting up tomorrow.
Yeah, brother, Joints. Don't I know it.
Yes.
I'm so marathoning excited. And podcasting it starting tomorrow.
That's amazing.
Yeah. July 4th. Thanks, Netflix.
Yeah, right?
Hey, do you know about Lock and Key, Aaron?
Lock and Key? No.
It's an amazing comic, and Netflix is now going to do a show about it. I'm super excited.
I'm going to have to check it out.
All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Can I just have the drugs now?